like, how do we create an environment where they can outperform and do better? And I think that's the time we spend on it. We have to beat projections. We have to have players outperform, because, like I said, ultimately having players outperform, having players beat those projections, that's how you have the season that we want to have.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was the voice of Jed Hoyer, and he did his end of season news conference yesterday. And it was there were a lot of interesting elements to it, not the least of which is the fact that it was Jed Hoyer. It was Jed meeting with the media and nobody else, just Jed.
Did you want to hear from Tom Ricketts?
Or yeah, well, I definitely want to hear from Tom Ricketts.
Craig Counsell. Jed, typically, that's a team president job, though.
Yeah, but I have been to some of these end of season things,
right.
You know, and I'm talking about when Theo was here, Theo was there, and he'd have Jed and Tom and Theo would do stuff together. And, you know, I've seen different combinations. I just watched, we just had AK and Billy in the, in to have a meeting. I'm just curious that it was only Jed, and not that it's, hasn't happened before. I'm just saying, I'd love to hear from Tom. I'd love to know what Tom thinks about, hey, Tom, you know, you got a manager on a 5-year deal. He's completed the first year. There's 4 years left. You got a team president that's got a year left on his deal.
Right.
I think there's a lot of information like that.
Okay. I
want to hear from Craig Counsell.
Sure. I think that's good. The Cubs typically speak with one singular voice, though. I think yesterday it wasn't maybe as strong as people wanted it to be, given the fact that they're back-to-back 83-win seasons, and given the fact that the problems that exist, there weren't any obvious solutions. And we just heard him coming in about people needing to outperform the back of their baseball card, or have those – somebody needed a career year. And when you look at the baseball metrics, nobody really did. But it's surprising when you look at the, let's say, for sake of consistency, let's look at FanGraphs.
Yes.
And Jed talked about having a 5-WAR player, right? The Cubs didn't have one of those.
No.
Who would you think off the top of your head, Mully, without looking, and maybe you already have peaked, but who would you think is the Cubs' highest rank, according to FanGraphs, had the highest WAR on the Cubs this year?
Wasn't it Michael Busch?
It was not Michael Busch. At one point in time, it was. I think midway through the season, he maybe tailed off a little bit. Michael Busch is, according to FanGraphs, WAR 2.3 WAR player.
So is this a? This is not a pitcher. This is every
pitcher included, if you want, but it's not a pitcher. You won't guess it, I wouldn't think, because we spent most of the season disappointed in his output. Maybe this goes to Jed's point,
because he.
It's Dansby Swanson.
Oh, it is Dansby Swanson.
4.3.
That is unbelievable.
FanGraphs 4.3. I think Baseball Reference is 4.0.
That's because of his defensive prowess.
Prowess, late surge at the plate, maybe a little bit better than he was when he started the season, but spent a lot of the season, according to Craig Counsell, nursing a knee injury that he aggravated in May. Maybe that explains his down numbers first part of the season. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Jed's point, though, is well taken when you look at FanGraphs as a reference point and you look at Dansby Swanson, 4.3 WAR, 3.9 for Nico Horner, Ian Happ, Seiya Suzuki, PCA, and Michael Busch bring up the rear. And I think that's part of the issue when he talks about guys needing to outperform their contracts or their typically what their expectations are. Didn't happen.
I think he was saying, though, in the cut we just heard, he's talking about outperforming their projections, right? Is that the projection that the team makes for what they expect them to be in that particular year? Is that the back of their base card? Is that when you're talking about young players, what they've set as their goal coming up? I'm just curious.
I'm sure they projected Cody Bellinger to be more than a 2.2 WAR player this year.
They do their own projections, is my point, right?
Right. Yeah, they do. They do. I just don't think it was satisfactory hearing that as a given excuse or reason for why the Cubs are out of the playoffs yet again. They did not aggressively – they tried to thread the needle at the trade deadline by getting Paredes and moving some people around. That wasn't – it may work next year, but it didn't work immediately, and I think people wanted immediate results.
I'm just curious, do they make the projection for the player, and is it made so as to allow them to exceed it? In other words, is it a lower estimate of what they will at least be this, and everyone has to outplay their projection? Or is it a pure baseball little formula of what we believe they're
going to
do?
I'm not sure we know what formula they use to project internally.
That would help.
Yeah, but we're never going to have access to that information.
Okay.
I don't think we'll ever have access to that information. But
I just like to know what it
more,
is.
Well, you're going to hear team president project that opinion because it's easier to say we weren't aggressive enough in spending. And we weren't willing to make those kind of deals to mortgage the future because we feel good about all of our prospects.
They should have.
Well, they should have in retrospect. I think in real time we were saying similar things. Here's what's interesting about Jed Hoyer, too, because of the belief that he has in the farm system. Dustin referenced talking about the prospects on the way. And he believes that those young players are the most valuable thing they have in terms of currency.
You know, there's really two currencies, when you think about a front office. You've got, financial flexibility, and you've got young players. And young players are, in today's game, certainly the most valuable currency there is. I think we're really healthy on both sides. You know, when you look at our books long term, they're incredibly clean. I think we have really good contracts on our books. The players that are on deals played really well. And I think, obviously, we've graduated a lot of guys, and we still have 7 top 100 prospects. So I think I'm proud of where we are on both sides of that. I think when it comes to trading young players, I think that those are things you have to consider, but it has to make sense for the long term. I think, making sure that we're not doing it just for a short term gain. I think that, young players have upside, young players stay healthier. And I think, the last thing we want to do is to get away from building through young players. I think that, Michael Bush this year, Pete this year, I think, showed a glimpse of what young players can do, I think, from an energy standpoint and from an upside standpoint. And we don't want to run away from that. So we'll consider deals that do make sense, that make sense organizationally. But I'm excited about our young players. I think a lot of those guys are going to have a huge impact on the Cubs for a long time.
I understand the value of prospects. I think the problem is their prospects. And I appreciate that the Cubs have all these top 100 players, but they had players before that were prospects that got hurt or something happened. I love young players. I would not be afraid to use them to make your roster better.
I wouldn't now because you have now put yourself in a position
where
the urgency is greater than it was a year ago and greater than it was the previous year. And each year that you go without a playoff appearance in Chicago in a big market, then the pressure intensifies whether you want to acknowledge it or not. So going into the final year of his contract, Jed Hoyer has to be more willing to part with these prospects that he considers the greatest currency in the organization or in baseball. Now you've got to use that currency to go out and obtain a difference maker at the major league level, because the future is now. The future isn't you're planning for as much as it may seem reckless to some people, but you can't really worry about 2 to 4 years down the road. You got to worry about 2 to 4 months getting off to a good start so you're in a position to get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they need to get to the playoffs. This is a big year for them. It's a big year for Jed. And I think he's got a good thing going. Yeah, the salaries look good. Great. They have a really nice thing going with the young players. Fantastic. But you're not bringing any of them up, right? Is Matt Shaw going to be playing here?
Stay tuned.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
Stay tuned.
I want to know that about every guy.
Well, Matt Shaw could be a guy that you could see or envision having a strong spring depending on what they do in the offseason. Are they going to deal Nico Hoerner? They're not dealing Paredes. They just got him. if Matt Shaw is on the major league team in a position to be counted on, it will be because they dealt Nico Hoerner and there's a void at second base. I don't know that I feel good about that possibility. At the same time, if you're encouraging Jed to think big and bold and you have to do something to affect change, that could be at the top of the list. I wonder about the level, as you point out, how does he approach his job and how much urgency does he feel? Because if he feels content, he's going to be less likely to make a move. This is what he said yesterday, talking about his own assessment of the job that he has done.
Yeah, I think that we are in really enviable and terrific position as an organization. I think that we've taken a really big picture view of building this organization. When we sold off the core in 21, we were in a position of having a farm system that was among the lowest ranked in baseball. We lost as much war off a team as any team in the last 30 years. And so we're building back from that place. I couldn't be more proud of the work that our staff has done and that I've done putting us in position we are now. I think to be really healthy from a payroll standpoint, from a future commitment standpoint, we're incredibly healthy from a roster and a young player standpoint. So I think from a organizational positioning standpoint, I feel excellent about where we are. You know, the last 2 years haven't ended in the postseason, and obviously I have to take accountability for that. You know, consecutive 83-win teams. We have to push beyond that. But in terms of positioning this organization for success next year and success in the future, I feel great about where we are as an organization, and I think the fans should feel good about it too.
Well, here's the problem.
What do you think of that?
Well, I think that, I understand what he's saying. I think he feels he's done a good job. I think he feels like he's got the contracts lined up. He feels like he's got a lot of young players on the way. And now it's a question of going out and solving some of the riddle. But here's the problem. Problem is, you didn't have a closer. And so when Edward Elzeli got injured, then all of a sudden your setup guy has to become your closer.
He owned that. He said that. You're right, though.
I'm just saying, how do you fix all that? And they found some answers, but by the end of the year. But they certainly didn't. And that's, you want to talk about 83 wins 2 years running. The problem at the back end became a big problem 2 years running.
We can debate all offseason whether or not it was a bigger issue, the lack of a closer or the lack of a big bat, because both were lacking with the Cubs. What I was surprised at in hearing what we just heard again was how he felt great where they were. I know what he meant, because organizationally the Cubs have rebuilt and replenished the farm system.
Yep.
They're competitive at the major league level, and they are relatively happy with the attendance and all the things that make a organization healthy. But you're not winning because you're not getting to the postseason. And I couldn't help but hear Jed Hoyer yesterday say what we just heard and contrast that sharply with what we heard from Craig Counsell weeks ago.
They're totally talking about different things.
They are. So do they have different goals? Do they have different timetables? Do they have different expectations heading into this offseason? And we know pro sports is what it is. And if you have guys who are not in concert with what they expect immediately, or they're not on the same timetable, then that's when friction, maybe it's creative tension, maybe that's what the Cubs need. But it was not what we heard from Craig Counsell in saying he wanted a 90-win roster. It was much different level of contentment we heard yesterday from Jed Hoyer.
312-644-6767. Kevin is in Palatine. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, David, that comment that you just said, that he, when he just said there, oh, the Cubs fans should be happy. None that I know. No, nobody is happy. And Mully, you're exactly right. This prospect hugging, he's so attached to these players who are all blocked. So here's the question. We keep bringing up Isak Paredes. He's a guy. He is nothing special. And then that's the thing. And Sahada Sharma had the quote of the day yesterday. Because, David, what you just said, and I don't blame you, but, maybe he'll be better next year. What Sahada said right to this guy's face yesterday is, why do we have to hope for players to be better? Why don't you just get players you know are going to be good? Because I can guarantee you, Shohei Ohtani wouldn't have cared about the wind. either with Juan Soto or any of these other guys we should be getting. And I'm only talking from my street corner. If Cody Bellinger leaves, I will throw a parade, because David, I know in 2019 or whatever, David, it's going to be 2025 next year. He's had three significant injuries. All his power is gone. And saying he's better than Seiya Suzuki, David, you're better than Seiya Suzuki. That's not a compliment. We need way better players. If we can trade, you know, Michael Bush and three prospects for Vlad Guerrero,
yes,
do it tomorrow.
Do it tomorrow.
He's a six-more player.
We agree on that, Kevin. We agree on that. 2019 was a reference to the last time Cody Bellinger won the Gold Glove, not his offensive power. But the point is well taken. Jed Hoyer can't fall in love with prospects to the point where you're planning for the future, because now it's getting away from you quickly.
I got to tell you, the prospect hugging thing is frightening, just because there is no guarantee. I like some of these young guys. They've had some, you know, there's a lot of promise to it. I get that. But that, you know, you give me a finished product. Give me a veteran guy that's ready to win right now, that you see guys play baseball and you're like, wow. How did they, you know, what if that guy had been here for his whole career?
I am in agreement this offseason in terms of the approach to the Cubs. I don't necessarily want to hear about, well, that contract is really team friendly.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about, well, you know, he's going to be an all-star in 2 to 3 years. I don't want to hear about where he's ranked on MLB pipeline, with due respect to Jim Callis, who does a great job. But enough about the Cubs' future. The Cubs have to approach it like, you want to give up three guys for Vlad Guerrero and you might be regretting that in 3 years? You're fine, because you've got to get back. You've got to do something different.
Shohei Ohtani, you know, you sign him to a contract in L.A. and the guy comes in and he's in his, he blew his arm out again. I don't know if he can pitch. He's in this rehab year. He's got to go. He's going to play, but I'm not sure about. The guy ends up creating a new statistic. Guess what?
50-50.
Worth every bloody penny. That's how you get really good. Get the best player in the game.
Yeah.
That's how you get good. Juan Soto, how old is Juan Soto?
Young.
25 years old.
Still young enough to be a prospect. Like, he might be younger than Michael Bush.
Holy God. Why wouldn't you want that guy on your team? Well, you know, we got to watch out because you don't
CBT.
Want to spend too much
CBT.
Money.
Don't forget about the CBT.
Oh, my God.
That's what we're going to hear. That's why the Cubs weren't one of the 16 teams mentioned yet.
Mm.
Let's hope it's a yet. But with Juan Soto, though, you're not leaving New York, because you're going to want to have the judge preside over every lineup, and you want to bat right where you are in that lineup. So, I don't know. That may be wishful thinking. But you got to be in the conversation. You got to be in every conversation.
That's the best player this year. The best player last year ended up signing with the Dodgers, which wasn't a surprise, and all the rest of it. And we know what happened. And God knows we've stopped monitoring what private flights are going to Toronto. But I, honest to God, if he had gone to Toronto, if he had been on that plane, guess what? Toronto would be in the playoffs
right
playing, now, and they would, no shadow of a doubt.
Or if they weren't playing this week, it's because they got a bye.
That's exactly, exactly correct. All right, we've got Dan Wiederer. We're going to bring in Dan next. We're going to talk some Bears. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
Hike, hike!
Dan Wiederer.
You've got a guy with credentials, you got a guy with some qualifications, and now there's just, when done at its best, provides a level of steadiness and stability that helps create and stimulate success.
On-air contributor for 670 The Score.
Listen, we're not going to accept the status quo. We are going to push for more. We are going to strive for more.
Co-host of the Take the North podcast with our own David Haw.
We're going to take the North and never give it back.
Dan Wiederer with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Bear down. Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to Dan Wiederer. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, Aturo.com. Dan, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Victory Wednesday. How could I be better?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because that really was about as necessary a win as you're going to find in a football season. I don't know. The town has calmed down a little. I think the fact that they were in danger had they lost that game of opening 1-3 after being 0-4 a year ago, 1-3 the year before that. It was something you needed to just show progress, to kind of give a hint you're heading in the right direction. I think the young quarterback, I think he will be better in 4 more weeks than he was at the start of the season. I think he will move forward in that fashion. I know that it's, you know, it's like recovery. You kind of take these steps. You don't really, it's not a day-to-day, game-to-game improvement. But we're seeing him making better decisions, and I thought he played well in that game.
Yeah, no question. I think from a team-wide perspective, you're right, that the psychological damage of falling to 1-3 would have been far greater than the confidence boost of improving to 2-2 was. But you got a calming win. You got a chance to reset. You've got the wind at your back going into another home game this weekend against an inferior opponent that you should beat. And I think you're seeing strides throughout the month of September from Caleb in his ability to understand what he's seeing, to react to it more quickly, to be able to take a profit with the checkdowns, and then to make a few big throws when you need him to make a few big throws, a touchdown pass to DJ, obviously one of them over the weekend, as well as that shot play to Cole Kmet down the middle right before DeAndre Swift's big touchdown run. And so you're seeing the growth, and you're seeing the flashes, and that's really what you want to see at this point.
Are we done talking about communication to the point where we can start focusing on execution?
No, I think this communication conversation is going to be ongoing. And look, when Shane Waldron was hired, David, one of the biggest pluses on his scouting report was that he has the ability to adapt. That's what people around the league said. That's what people inside the Bears organization propped him up as. So now you have to continue to evolve and adapt as the season goes along and find an offensive identity that works not only for you, but more so for your players. And I applaud the players for not just sitting back and going, well, this isn't going well, but being proactive and being very vocal with their concerns about what was going wrong and what needed to change. They were successful in the troubleshooting efforts in week 4. It's not a 1-week league. You know, you have to move on to week 5 and find a formula that works for you again this week and continue to build momentum going forward rather than constantly reinventing. Hopefully there's only one of those major communication, episodes, but I think it's going to be ongoing all year.
You know, we talked a little bit about Mercedes Lewis, and you obviously can appreciate the length of a guy's career, the fact that he's done it for as long as he has. And I'm not getting down on him in any way, but I don't know about this whole leadership thing. I don't know that he covered himself in glory by kind of revealing everything he revealed. And the other element to me is he is the third tight end, and he is a blocking specialist, and they have used him, I believe it is something like 59 snaps on the season. That's not even a full game necessarily, and that's 4 weeks. And he's the guy that's kind of leaking all this stuff out. And then they kind of honor him in the post game because of the great achievement of continuing to play. I just don't know how to feel about him.
Well, I'll tell you this, that when they brought him back for a second year after seeing what he did in his first year here in Chicago, it was with the belief that he would be a steadying force inside the locker room. That's his primary value to this football team. There's obviously still things he can do as a blocking tight end in your offense, but you're not going to get high volume out of him at this stage. And so the biggest plus for Mercedes Lewis right now is the opportunity to be a guy that is respected inside the locker room, that has a professional approach that other guys can both emulate and respond to, and then to have a voice that not only the players but the coaches respect. And so that's part of the experience here with Mercedes Lewis. I you can go either way with what happened last week. I do give this team credit again for not sitting back and just going, oh God, here we go again, but saying, wait a second, no, we're not going to do this. And some of the most important voices in that room are those captains. It's Byard, it's Mercedes, it's Cole Kmet, it's Jalen Johnson. I think all those guys were very vocal last week in a way that was productive, and that's really what you want is productive leadership as opposed to some of the things that we've all experienced in this town, where it starts to go a little bit south and then people start taking shots and calling other people out and yelling at kickers in the locker room after games and things of that nature.
So Wednesday, you start looking ahead at the next opponent, and certainly Andy Dalton and the Panthers come in. I wonder, from a Bears defensive perspective, and maybe from your own perspective, what's the right level of respect to show Andy Dalton, and what do you think the approach will be in coming after him?
Yeah, so I had my good buddy Joe Person from The Athletic on the Take the North podcast this week to talk about things from Carolina, and he just really believes that Dalton has come in and run Dave Canales' offense the way it's supposed to be run, and in a very stark contrast to what was happening with Bryce Young in the first two games of the season. And so what you have is a guy that just, you know, he's got the veteran experience to understand what he's seeing. He's not going to be tricked easily. He's not going to give you a lot of freebies like a Will Levis or an Anthony Richardson would. And so you just have to be you, you know, as a defense, the, not to borrow a term from Matt Nagy there, be you. But this defense has been really good. It's 10 straight games holding an opponent to 21 points or fewer. They're you know, still giving up a few too many chunk plays for their own liking, but they're keeping you in position to win games every week. And so you just have to understand who Andy is and how hard he is going to be to trick. But then if you play up to your potential, you should be fine, particularly with how the Panthers defense is on the other side, where you should have a very favorable matchup offensively to take advantage of a lot of things.
Dan, we talked to Coach Wannstedt yesterday, and he said something that has kind of rang in my ears since. He was talking about DeAndre Swift, and he was saying that that DeAndre Swift is a guy that he is not, in his opinion, a between the tackles running back, and that he goes down too easily with first contact. And he said that there are times when he gets the ball and he thinks that either of the other two running backs would get twice as many yards. If he gets two, they'd have gotten four, that kind of thing in terms of interior running. Now, he had that big explosive run. He had a big game. He had a nice game catching the ball. He had seven catches. He had a high percentage of their offensive production, and I thought that was great. But is it a breakthrough? Is that something now we're going to see him kind of teetering on the edge of 100 every game in terms of rushing, or do they need to keep doing what they were doing and spreading the ball amongst that group?
Well, look, it got up to, I think, 163 when you add in the receiving yards the other day. And so one of the reasons DeAndre Swift's here is because he gives you something as both a runner and as a passer. He's not going to be your traditional old school downhill runner. But if you can get him into some creases in the outside zone running game and the inside zone running game, and allow him to understand what patience means to this running attack, to waiting for a hole to develop, and then when it's there hitting it, you're going to get some production. Now, they took advantage of a very poor Rams defense last week. They get another bottom five run defense coming into Soldier Field this week with the Panthers, who, oh, by the way, don't rush the passer well. They don't have Brian Burns anymore. They have Derek Brown and Shaq Thompson on injured reserve. You've got a very vulnerable Panthers defense that you should be able to take the wind at your back from Sunday's win over the Rams and continue to push forward. And that goes for DeAndre Swift. It goes for the offense as a whole. I think they were able to do some things again with him, not only as a runner in Sunday's game, but getting him out in pattern to where he's a very good check down option for Caleb Williams. And then a couple of screens hit the other day, including the 27 yarder. That was a big loosener for the offense, getting them a little bit of confidence, getting them going a little bit. And so that versatility by Swift is very valuable.
This segment with Dan Wiederer brought to you by TimberTech Decking and Railing. Everything would be, should be. Visit TimberTech.com. So, Dan, what kind of step do you expect to see from Caleb Williams this week? And what is reasonable to expect given the comfort level he began to show last Sunday?
Yeah, no, you're just still looking for steady progress. And I've kind of put the ultimatum on him, so to speak, of having one play per quarter where you go, okay, that's why you were picked number one overall. And there were a few of them over the weekend. Again, I can't say enough about that 22-yard throw he made to Cole Kmet, the dart over the middle right before Swift's touchdown run, because it was not only, as Cole Kmet defined it, NFL open throw, but it was a guy in the fourth quarter, you know, trying to pad a two-point lead, who found the right balance of being aggressive and staying in attack mode without putting the football in harm's way. And so that's a huge step for a young quarterback, is understanding how to do that to not get so conservative with the lead that you forget that you have gifts that will add to that lead. They were able to do it in that moment. You go back and you show that on film. You say, look at this throw. You recognize that the linebacker was flat-footed as he bit on the play fake. You saw a window that some quarterbacks in this league would not take, and you trusted your arm to make a throw there to Cole Kmet. Cole makes a really nice play on the ball. It's 22 yards. And the next play, you added another explosive on top of that, and you're in the end zone. Those are huge growth moments for a quarterback. And so I want to see more of those. Again, one per quarter where there's a flash where you go, that guy is special, and then continually understanding what it takes to win at this level, which, as you guys know, one of the prerequisites is taking care of the football in many, many moments.
Jervon Dexter has done pretty well for himself. He's got some sacks, and he's been influential thus far. He is a guy that is turning 23 on Saturday. Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, for a young guy, he's really having a pretty good breakout himself this year.
Yeah, great push forward from him. And we heard all throughout the offseason about the things he had done to his body and the dedication he had put into improving himself as a football player. And you're always waiting for the first month of the season to see it play out and take that prove it test. Dexter has certainly proved it through the first month. You want to continue to see that grow because that's just another element to add to your defense, which is already really, really good. And I'm sure you guys agree with this. There's that closing mentality that the Bears had on Sunday is something they have to take forward. It's that complimentary football of, if you're not going to score to add to your lead, well, then at least use a punter to pin the other team down deep, and then trust your defense to go out there and make a play. And the confidence that defense had, even with the ball in Matthew Stafford's hands at the end of that game, that they were going to get things done, and then to get it done on the first play of the final drive, it tells you a little something about where that group is headed and how they're wired right now.
Great stuff, Dan.
Appreciate it, Dan.
All right, enjoy the week, fellas.
You too.
That is Dan Wiederer. Why didn't we ask him who's going to win, just to annoy him?
He on Wednesday, he's never ready. You know that. He's got
a
couple injury reports, and he's got to be out there. Yeah, he.
I know exactly what he thinks.
Yeah, I imagine going into the Panthers game, it'd be hard to envision a scenario where the Bears blow this game. If they do, things have gone terribly wrong.
Yeah, I feel good about the Bears this week, but that's more of an indictment on their opponent.
Well, the next two opponents, actually, you should look at it as winnable games, and then heading into the bye week with a 4-2 record would be something that would be very exciting here in Chicago. No doubt about it. If you can win the next two games, then you go into a break with a 3-game winning streak. That again is 3 weeks from disaster or prosperity. And if you win 3 in a row, that's around the corner.
That's how you win the bye week, David.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
In the NFL, I don't believe there's any that's not a real thing, man. There's so many good players on every single team, and there's so many things that can happen. It's any given Sunday. That's real. You know what I'm saying? And if you're not on what you need to be on, you can get beat at any time. And we're really excited for this week. We're excited for this matchup back at home. And that's kind of where our focus is, man. It's just getting to be 1-0 this week, and then taking a trip across the pond, man. So we're excited. We are.
That's TJ Edwards. You're listening to Mully and Haw on the Score, and he was on yesterday with Dan and Marshall, the Bernstein and Harris show, and he doesn't believe in the concept of trap games in the NFL. He's right. There's just too many upsets and weird results and too many games. There's too many teams that look like they're going somewhere, and then all of a sudden they're not. It happens every week.
Got to approach every game like it's a trap game.
Yeah.
That's what you want to hear from a leader on that defense that is full of leaders, the guys who aren't going to take anybody lightly. Though I do think that Dave Wanstead had a point when he said that he couldn't name 5 Panthers.
Yeah,
I'm not sure you ask the average Bears fan, even the diehard Bears fan, name 5 Panthers. I don't know that you could name.
DJ Moore?
Could DJ Moore? Probably not. A lot of turnover since he was traded. Remember, once upon a time, that team had DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey in the same offensive huddle.
Yeah.
Those were the days. That wasn't that long ago.
Speaking of those were the days and not that long ago, am I the only one that got a little chuckle out of the idea of TJ Edwards saying that we're going to go across the pond. Like, isn't across the pond a very antiquated term? And doesn't it belong more in some sad old song as opposed to a jetting to a football game in London?
Perhaps. Yeah.
It's such an old-fashioned term. I don't know why. Every time we've played that, I chuckle to myself.
I think it was amusing to hear him put it in those terms. Yeah, I hope and I know that he will be focused more on what's going on the lakefront rather than across the pond. They're not looking ahead. They're not ducking the Panthers. That was kind of funny. It was good, though, to hear him talk about the Panthers in a way that suggests the Bears will respect their opponent. And when I asked Dan Weider about Andy Dalton, I didn't say it with tongue-in-cheek at all. Andy Dalton is one of those guys that could throw four picks or it could throw for 350 yards.
Yes.
You just know if he gets on a hot streak, even though I would challenge people to wonder who are their leading receivers. And anybody that guesses Deontay Johnson and Xavier Legette should be eligible for a prize because I don't know that anybody could identify them on a SportsCenter highlight. So
how old is he?
Dalton?
36.
36, yeah.
Okay.
He's 36. We talked about how long he had been in the league yesterday. Yeah. He has been better. He's been very good for the majority of that time. Certainly his time in Cincinnati is kind of overlooked and underrated.
But that was so long ago.
It was a long time ago.
That's when he was a regular player. Here he's been forced onto the field.
Well, he's forced on the field because he was insurance against Bryce Young being bad, and Bryce Young was bad. And he was exposed as a guy that got a little skittish in the pocket, started to develop some bad habits, and the new coach, Dave Canales, decided to replace him rather than stick with him. I don't know if that's the smartest decision, but I'm not an expert on Panthers football.
Yeah.
I think typically you would want your young quarterback, drafted number one overall, to play through those pains.
Yes.
To get better as a result of the experience. And what do you do with Bryce Young now? Are you going to try to trade him before the deadline? What if Andy Dalton gets hurt or is bad again? Is he going to be back in the lineup? Will we see Bryce Young on Sunday if Andy Dalton's off to a bad start?
Right, or if he gets hit the wrong way.
Which he could against this defense. Right. Montez Sweat, mismatch against whatever offensive lineman that is unlucky enough to try to block him one-on-one or whatever poor tight end is going to be matched up. Andy Dalton could be in harm's way. So, yeah, we might see Bryce Young. That would be something because – I would like to see Bryce Young stand back-to-back with Caleb Williams just to show how much taller Caleb Williams is.
Oh, boy. Poor Bryce
Young. A lot of people in town were worried about that during the combine. Remember that?
Yeah, I thought – didn't Mark Rohde told us that he was – at one point it went through his head that he might try to steal him.
Is Mark Rohde taller than Bryce Young?
Well, no, I'm talking about Caleb. Grody, like, apparently stared down Caleb as Caleb walked by him in the hallway.
You don't want Mark Grody staring you down.
Unbeknownst to Caleb.
You don't want Mark Grody staring
Mark
you down.
Mark was trying to size him up.
He was, yeah.
And, he told us, yeah, he's not a big guy. And I thought, like, really? Are you threatening him?
Bears.
Before we break, expect to hear anything from Caleb Williams today that you think will be significant to his growth and to his development? Do you think that he... is satisfied with the way he played on Sunday?
Yes. I thought we heard that from him out of the game. He was pleased with the victory. He has said several times that he'll do anything it takes to win.
I like that.
And we have heard that.
I like hearing that reinforced.
I
like a comfortable quarterback, and it seems like Caleb Williams, at the very least, is getting more comfortable on the job.
And he will probably mention that he towers over Bryce Young. Just for your own sanity. Bryce Young. Did you see Bryce Young?
Poor Bryce Young.
He showed up at camp.
Yeah.
He looked like he was going to day school. Well, he looked like a guy.
Maybe he shouldn't have ridden his bike.
He was going to day camp. No, he had this little backpack. And
the peanut butter and jelly sandwich and wedges was a little bit much.
Well, you just want to give him a little hug.
The fruit cup.
It's going to be okay, little fella.
Come on.
You're okay. The guy could buy and sell us both.
Yes, he could.
Yeah. Sad reality of our lives. We got a lot to talk about with the Cubs. We heard from Jed Hoyer yesterday. There's still a couple bits of it that we haven't pulled apart. A
couple bits.
Want to get into it.
Big day in playoff baseball as well. We can touch on that before we talk to Bruce at 825.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.